what we know is the We Always Swing Jazz Series is in its 19th season, but you've been doing jazz promotion and jazz tours for like 30 years, and you came to Columbia to go to school. How did that pursuit of an academic degree morph into the We Always Swing Jazz Series?
The short story is I came here in 78, that would be 1978, to earn a master's degree in journalism and print journalism. Morphed is the correct word because I certainly didn't plan on doing this. What happened was after I graduated in 1980, among the many things that I did was freelance write, and I covered music and primarily jazz. As it turned out, in 1985, Murray's opened and the owners, Bill Shields and Gary Moore, wanted to do live jazz there, and they asked me if any of the nationally known artists I was writing about, reviewing LPs at that point, or writing profiles or whatever, if they'd be interested in performing at Murray's. And so I told them I would check, and as it turned out, I was in the middle of doing a longer piece for Downbeat magazine on the late pianist James Williams, who would later become an associate. And James said he would certainly be willing to perform at Murray's. And Murray's opened July 1 of 1985, and James, he performed solo, and he was really the first. And James was a former member of Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, and by that time, he's on the front lines of New York major present-day jazz artists. And James was a delightful person. Unfortunately, he has passed away. But James befriended both young and old musicians. He knew the so-called elder statesmen that he would refer to as the Grand Masters, and he was also very good with much younger musicians at the time, people like Christian McBride, who were still in their teens, Jeff Keyser, you know, I can name a lot. He nurtured a lot of young musicians, then young musicians. And so all of a sudden, I started receiving calls from people saying, James Williams said I should give you a call if I want to play in Missouri. The economics were such that you really couldn't just fly a band out or a person out and have them play. Murray's at that time was just 100 seats. It's larger now. But you couldn't. Nobody could make any money. The players couldn't get paid. The restaurant couldn't make any money. The formula wasn't there. So I ended up starting to represent artists and book them around initially the central Midwest, and then it expanded. And at that time, of course, there was not the internet or anything else like it, cell phones or whatever. And so I ended up calling up all the NPR stations and talking to the music directors and in many cases the actual jazz director, if you can believe that, at a lot of NPR stations, and would simply ask them, where in your town, your vicinity, is there a venue that books serious jazz, that books nationally known artists? And so I informally began a database and a grassroots thing, and started booking lengthy tours, upwards of 30 to 40 days at a time, going across the country, back and forth, in Canada and Europe and other places. And then what happened was, all the while I was arranging these tours, I would drop the artists in to Murray's or into Columbia, in some cases, larger venues, so that we had jazz in this market. And what happened was Murray started to get very busy. We were doing about a national act once a month by this time. But Murray started to get very busy, and we were doing shows on Saturday nights, and it didn't quite mesh with the regular, it's primarily a restaurant. So somewhere around fall of 94, having done close to 100 shows at Murray's, it made the most sense to not do them at Murray's anymore and figure out another way to present jazz in this market. So that's when I got the idea of trying to do a subscription series. That's where I came up with the idea of the We Always Swing Jazz series. So it was between 90, I conceived of it in late 94, early 95, and the first season was the fall of 95.